welcome to this special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2024 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We reached out to all candidates filed to run in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. The race for lieutenant governor features four candidates seeking to replace Democrat Bethany Hall Long, who is running for governor. Today, we focus on two of the candidates, Democrats Kyle Evans Gay and Debbie Harrington. We start with Gay. She is making her first run for statewide office. She was elected to represent the 5th State Senate District in North Wilmington in 2020, flipping a seat held by Republicans for 40 years prior. The lieutenant governor's role is often what a person makes of it. That makes it a little bit unique, as you noted. How do you feel specifically you would make that position consequential? It sounds like you do have some issues that you would kind of like to be in your lieutenant governor portfolio.
Absolutely. It is quite a privilege to be able to build a portfolio in that way. But let's first start with what's absolutely in the portfolio. I'll start with presiding over the Senate, making sure that one chamber in our branch of government is operational is no small feat. And I think that it is a very influential and important role to work both across the aisle with the House and to make sure that the lieutenant governor can be a person who is bringing the legislature in on some of the most important goals and leadership opportunities that the administration sets out for us starting next year.
I do want to jump in there and ask, because one of the things I did want to ask you about is that presiding over the Senate, a lot of people maybe don't think of that as a key piece of the lieutenant governor's role. They think of it as more like a ceremonial type of role. But I guess what you're saying is you feel like in a time when there's kind of maybe strong partisan tensions, that the lieutenant governor in that role can set or maintain the tone and agenda for the state Senate, at least.
Absolutely. And I would say even beyond, I would say in the legislature writ large. Okay. And I don't think I could have said it much better than you did. But really, the way I think about it is as a almost chief legislative liaison, as the eyes and ears of the administration within within Legislative Hall. Keep in mind that in addition to that presiding role, the lieutenant governor has that opportunity to leverage existing relationships. I really feel that in this day and age when I feel grateful that we have a Democratic trifecta here in Delaware, I believe that is an opportunity but also a responsibility. And I do believe that we can do better at moving together, the House, the Senate, and the administration on our shared goals for Delaware and setting out a mission, how we're going to reach that mission, and really showing Delawareans that we can work together in concert to achieve it. I don't think that happens without someone in that seat in the Senate who is willing to bring their relationships to bear, is willing to be a good negotiator, and is willing to really put Delawareans first and above politics.
And I do want to circle back and let you talk a little bit more about what else you feel is in that portfolio as a lieutenant governor, or at least what you would like it to be in your portfolio.
Yes, thank you. So separately, the Board of Pardons is absolutely in that portfolio. One thing that people might not know about my background is that I've practiced criminal law. I've been in trial. I have made opening and closing arguments in front of judges. I've also served at the appellate in the appellate level in the criminal law system. And so I have seen what it means to go back and understand where justice has not been done in prior years. I've worked in that role with victims as well, understanding what they have gone through. And I would be the first lieutenant governor, the first chair of the Board of Pardons to bring that experience to the role. And I do believe that as Board of Pardons, there's an obligation to get things done, to make it move quickly, to ensure everyone is heard, and that includes families and families of victims. But also, there's an opportunity to use that position to state very clearly what we feel is important as far as continuing to reform our criminal justice system. But getting to kind of what I would create, those who know me, those who have watched me work in Dover, understand very well that I do my job on behalf of kids. Mm-hmm. And so that has resulted in a focus on childcare, on early education. And so I would really hope that my role, could be chief kids officer or however you want to phrase it, but that I would be in a way empowered to do the work I believe will help both our economy and our educational outcomes and remove disparities for children and future generations. That would be a privilege to be allowed to do that work.
So since you mentioned kids and education, Yes. Let me jump into that particular area, because obviously education, and specifically education funding, have been significant issues recently in this state. The lawsuit over education funding equity led to a report in the fall on education funding that recommended the state spend an additional $600 million to $1.1 billion per year. You and your fellow lawmakers did create a public education funding commission to look at the funding structure in the coming months. But I'm interested in what you think personally about where things stand with education funding, starting with, based on that report, should the state be spending more?
It's a great question and one that has plagued us for years. What is the volume of spending versus what students are receiving as far as opportunities to advance? And I think I'm going to be relying a lot on the commission and a lot on our partners in education to help shape that answer to that question going forward. What I will say is that teachers are underpaid when it comes to comparisons with our area states. So I know we're going to need to pay more simply to recruit and retain the workforce we need to do the job. When it comes to investing in types of learning where there haven't been those additional investments, I'm thinking about English language learners. I'm thinking about special education. I'm thinking about schools like the one my kids attend, Title I schools, who thankfully receive federal funding. But what else can we be doing for those populations or those schools that have a population in poverty, right? And so from my perspective, there are places that we need to invest. I'm interested in knowing whether we are investing in areas that we shouldn't invest in as well. So do I think overall education funding has to go up? Likely, but I am more interested in understanding the state of play as it is today.
Based on what you're saying, I'm curious if you feel like one of the primary areas to look at is the actual structure of funding. And that is specifically, is it time to move on from the unit system and look for a weighted funding system that other states use or some combination of those two?
It is. And I apologize if I wasn't as clear about that. But I'm glad you mentioned or something or some combination, because truly where you have seen some of the most significant and successful reform in other places is where states have moved away, or counties, right, depending on how funding is done in other places, where they have moved away from that traditional unit funding system, but preserved pieces of that system that allow for things like predictability or long-term planning for our local school district. There will always be winners and losers when you make a change like this. That's a political reality. It's our job as leaders of the state in the next administration to ensure that everyone is at a table to understand where they will be affected and how, and to make sure the state can be there to support in whatever way possible a status quo of funding so that we don't lose teachers and staff and other individuals who, like I said, are so critical to making sure education happens every day.
Right. To that point, you talk about bringing people to the table. And you also mentioned earlier that this has been a problem that's bedeviled the state for quite some time. We've seen a lot of different tables that people have been brought to, from Vision 2015, WEAC, WEAC, Reading Consortium. Is there an urgency now to do something?
Absolutely, there is an urgency. And I think the urgency that we are feeling now is creating a political will to do something great. And that is a great responsibility. What is on the table now, where there's a possibility, is that we have to find the funding. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand what we're going to do as a state and what our investment is.
I want to move on to another issue that is also becoming much more important throughout the state. That is affordable housing, a very complex issue, much like education. Where do you feel the state can be most effective in addressing it? Where should the state focus its efforts to have perhaps the most impact quickly?
I do think the state can be most effective in unifying parts of the county codes so that there's more predictability statewide. Mm-hmm. I think that areas to look at are density. I think that permitting needs to be looked at as well. Most importantly, when you're talking about bringing individuals here to invest, whether it's businesses or in housing, and we're talking about housing here, we want there to be an understanding of how they can do business here so that we can encourage them and incentivize them in some cases to create the types of housing that we need. We don't just need houses that millionaires can afford, mm-hmm. right? We need housing that people, everyday Delawareans, can afford. And so I'm interested in making sure that we are, that the state is demonstrating, whether it's through funding or opportunities for investment, that we believe in building the types of housing that is needed.
When we move on to healthcare mm-hmm. costs and access also becoming pretty stubborn issues in the state. Delaware has one of the highest costs of care in the nation, and at the same time struggles to attract and retain providers and specialists. It plays out in a lot of areas. We know specifically within the state government, cost of coverage for state employees and retirees, but also areas like dealing with care for an aging population in the state. Lawmakers did work on state retiree benefits this year, also created a hospital cost review board. Building on those things, what would you advocate prioritizing in terms of addressing healthcare cost and access in the state?
Well, you heard that Delaware did move on to look at healthcare costs from a hospital standpoint. Mm-hmm. And we really can't just focus on hospitals. We need to look at other cost drivers within the healthcare system. And so I think in the coming years, you're going to have legislators and the administration alike taking a look at ways in which our healthcare system, the way it has been created in America, right? We do not have universal healthcare. Mm-hmm. What the effects are for consumers here, whether it's from, pharmacy costs, pharmacy benefit costs, or other pieces, insurance being a big piece of the puzzle, and thankful for our insurance commissioner's work there. And this question about how can we recruit doctors, nurses, PAs, right, APRNs, how can we train people to become, hospital assistants? All of that is wrapped up in every other economic issue and education issue that we're going to talk about today, because we currently cannot offer physicians or other medical professionals moving to Delaware a public school system that has a greater than 40% proficiency at the fourth grade level, right? And so we need to offer that. We currently have a housing crisis that makes it unaffordable for, say, a nurse who needs to work at BB in Lewis to be able to live within a half hour of work. And I'll go back to childcare because people need to hear it. Right, that same nurse may have to drive a half hour the other direction, west, in order to drop their child off for affordable and available childcare before driving back east to serve our most vulnerable seniors in a Lewis hospital system. And so this is a question that will rely on our willingness to leverage that political will we talked about earlier to do something big in the areas of education and housing.
You talked about the interconnected part of all of this. And part of that interconnection, obviously, is the budgetary piece of it. Everything we're talking about comes with some kind of cost. The outgoing Governor John Carney is taking, I think, arguably a more cautious and pragmatic approach towards spending, emphasizing one-time spending, so-called budget smoothing, to set aside dollars to hedge against future economic downturns. What approach would you advocate for to balance spending that's necessary with fiscal responsibility?
I'm very grateful to our governor for the work that he has done to manage us through COVID in particular, but throughout his 8 years. And we in the legislature have taken steps to codify some of the structures around making sure that we have that long-term stability. What I think has been frustrating with one-time spending, not from my perspective as a legislature, but from my constituents' perspective, is that with certain types of one-time spending, they look great on paper, but they don't allow initiatives to grow and plan in a way that you might, as a business or a nonprofit, do. And so I think really looking forward, there are a couple strategies that I would advocate for. One is that Delaware needs to be at the national table advocating for federal funds that are available to be applied here in Delaware. I believe there should be a group in whether it's in an office or reports to the governor to ensure that we are doing a survey of what's available at the federal level and offering grant writing assistance internally and implementation assistance if needed to our many agencies who could benefit from federal money. So that's one thing on the table. That's not going to solve all of our problems, but it's a strategy that I believe has been under-leveraged in recent years. I also think that we need to focus our one-time spending on innovative pilots that are data-driven and that are designed with an intention to fund later. I'm really proud of a pilot program I worked on with the Housing Authority. We have been funding rental reporting. Many people don't know that a rent payment does not go onto a credit score. So what we have been doing is piloting with 400 families a program that gets their rent reported on their credit score with the hopes of enabling them to secure credit for either a home loan, a business loan, student loans, whatever is that next step for them. And that is something that is absolutely feasible and fundable at a larger level. I would like to fund more pilots like that that allow us to see where we should go and that aren't stopgap measures as far as funding.
In a time where there seems to be maybe more mistrust in government, what role do you feel the Lieutenant Governor's office and you personally could play in giving Delawareans greater transparency and accountability from their government?
If only, right? I acknowledge that there is this partisanship, I think, that is driving a mistrust in government, and it hurts my heart. I believe you build trust at the community level. I believe you build trust by being excellent at what you do and by being responsive. And I do believe that you build trust by demonstrating that you are meeting the needs that people are telling you they have. And I think that in one case in particular, or one issue in particular for Delawareans is customer service. And I do believe that it is difficult for many Delawareans to access the agencies they need, the departments they need, when they're either going through a crisis or they don't know who to turn to, and or they're doing something very normal, like receiving benefits from the state. I believe that focusing on customer service and responsiveness and making sure that we can solve everyday problems will be the start of building those blocks for overall increased trust and partnership, clearly partnership with community.
I do want to ask, because some of your GOP colleagues and some government transparency groups have floated this idea of an inspector general's office. Is that something you would support or at least consider going forward?
I would absolutely consider it going forward. I listened when our state auditor told us that she needs support as well. And that really spoke volumes to me. If we are not adequately funding the auditor's office to look into areas that we could be doing more work in, increase transparency, I'd like to fund her office. I'd like to empower her to do her work. And then if there are pieces outside of her mandate that she either can't touch or that we need to bolster, then the answer may very well be an independent inspector general. But I'm really interested in making sure our auditor's office is also well-placed to do the great work, quite frankly, that we've asked her to do.
That's Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor Kyle Evans Gay. Our full conversation with her is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, our candidate conversation with another Democrat in the Lieutenant Governor's race, Debbie Harrington. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.